This hour is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Live from Macho Blue Earth, Robbins Kaplan Studios, Native Roots Radio.
We went to all the powwows when we were young. At that time, children could not dance. Only people over 50 years of age could dance. Most people do not know this, that the government forbid children to dance Indian. And that was so they could wipe out the culture of the young people, and then finally the new generation would never know what
happened. I'm a member of the American Indian Movement, and I'm from the indigenous nations of the Western Hemisphere.
We American Indians, we can be anything we want to be, except American Indians.
You were here long before any of us were here.
Buju, everybody. My name is Peggy Flanagan. Guabagani Gadikagna Jujuba. I'm from the White Earth Nation, and my family's the Wolf Clan.
There was trouble in Custer, South Dakota yesterday.
That the American Indian Movement is a very proud, continuing part of American Indian society. I thank you.
But what I tell you is that we are not backing down. We're here, we'll stand here, because we have been here for 10,000 years. We're the home team, and we're not going anywhere. We're rich.
Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Ahu Ho-Chunk Raja. Wakunjahade Hingadena. McCollinized name is Robert Pilot. We discuss national and Twin City Native American news and events. As we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. On today's show, Carly Badhead Bull, Kate Bean will be speaking their truth and updates on Bede Makaska. We also have Robbins Kaplan's lawyer, Brendan Johnson, speaking on how Robbins Kaplan supports Indian country. And we have John Greendeer, former president, bringing us vital information on Ho-Chunk Nation and our ways. House Representative Mary Kanush Podine giving us updates at the Capitol. In our second hour, we'll be having Jamie Edwards, a government affairs person for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, speaking about his latest trip in New York City, along with our regulars, Wendy Pilot, speaking about our sacred animals, and we'll end it off with Curtis West with What Does My Elder Think? Let's get going right away with Carly Badhead Bull and Kate Bean speaking their truth and updates on Bede Makaska.
Representative Jamie Becker Finn, who's from Leech Lake, introduced an amendment on the House floor to a larger environmental bill, and it passed unanimously. So now we're on to the Senate to see what happens there.
So how did we get to this point?
Well, yesterday, the Minnesota Court of Appeals issued a ruling where they ruled that the state DNR did not have the authority to restore the Dakota name Bede Makaska. So we were surprised. We didn't expect that. We had gone through, we jumped through all the hoops of the process that was laid out in front of us through multiple entities, multiple government agencies, including their attorneys, who also looked at this same statute. And yet here we are.
So everyone was surprised. None of these agencies were aware that this lawsuit was still being considered.
Well, that kind of gets us into another point, Kate, that just a few days ago, we have some Republicans attacking the Minnesota Historical Society.
Yeah, I think we're living in a time right now where we as Indigenous people are, where we are advocating for change within institutions and within public spaces. And anytime that happens, there will be pushback. And there will be those who oppose our language and our presence in certain spaces, but our people will continue to speak, and will continue to share our stories and to share our narratives and our language in public spaces and on signs. And, we as Indigenous people are everywhere. This is Indigenous land, and we all we all should be respected and acknowledged and deserve the right to know more about one another.
Right, and seeing it's not being and hasn't been taught in school, I think, you know, it's funny when we do bring up these issues and talk about where, like, maybe Calhoun, what he's really all about, people are like-minded or miffed that there's a lake or a county or anything named after him.
Right, and that's what we learned from all of the public engagement that we did throughout this process. You know, and we were very frustrated with the court's ruling yesterday. So we were very, you know, we were frustrated with the court's ruling yesterday, but we also, I think, understand that it just means that this part of the story isn't over yet, that there's more to be gained, there's more to be learned. It's a hard lesson to have to learn over and over again. I wish we didn't have to. But this is a small group of people, and I think that's really important for people to remember. You know, we have a lot of support, both for Bede Makaska, both for use of the word Bedote at Fort Snelling. And unfortunately, these small factions, these small groups of people, they have power because they have money, and they are afraid of losing that power. And so, to me, what all of this means is that we're making progress and we're moving in the right direction.
And there's a lot of people on board here. You know, I mean, I think that what we saw with the Bede Makaska signage yesterday, and what we saw with that name, is we had the president of the park board, we had the mayor, we have the governor's office, we have all of these legislators, all of these senators, all of these people who are supporting this. We've come a long way.
Yes, we have. So what do you think? Is it fear? Is it ignorance? Is it a fear of change? Or you're not a psychologist, but what's your feeling?
I think it's all of that. You know, one of the things that we saw, that we witnessed in the last few years with our work on the name restoration, is we would enter into rooms full of people who didn't want us to be there, didn't understand why we were there. And yet when we started telling our stories, when we started helping people to see the lake in a different way, we saw hearts and minds start to open and shift. And that resulted in the name restoration, but it also resulted in a lot of people having a deeper connection, especially, you know, when you think about some of the non-Native people who had no idea about the Dakota presence, about the Dakota history, no idea that wild rice used to grow there, or the wild strawberries, or that there was a village there. And what we learned from people is, as they started hearing those stories, they felt more connected to the lake themselves, both Native and non-Native.
And I think that education is a really important piece to this. And this is where our educators, our school teachers, you know, we have so many of them on board because they see the way this affects our kids. And they see that our kids want to know more. Our kids want to learn about this history. They want to be more connected to these spaces in which we live. All of our kids do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, education is a big piece to this. And a lot of what's happening now is due to a lack of education. And so what we're trying to do is trying to spread more knowledge so that more people understand where we're at and where we're going and why. Because even though some people may sort of be supportive of some of this work, they might not fully understand who we are and they might not know why. And so that why is a big piece to it. And education is important.
Right. And when you look at some of the education issues that we have in the state, in the city, across the country, both with our Native kids and non-Native kids, but I want to especially think about our Native kids. You know, one of the things that I hear through my work talking with education experts across the region and across the country is that our kids want to feel connected. They want to know who they are. They need that connection to cultural identity. They want that connection to language, to place. And this is a huge issue. A lot of the issues that we're facing right now, whether it's in education or otherwise, have to do with our disconnection from one another and from place. So this is just one way that we can help our kids to make that connection.
So that's just, what are we looking at Fort Snelling right now, Kate?
Well, so the Fort Snelling signage is a separate issue because there was no official name change at that place. There is a whole community engagement process that needs to happen. What the Minnesota Historical Society has done is they've added a Dakota word to this, to temporary signage, to reflect some upcoming changes that are happening, where there's a large group of Dakota people who have worked incredibly hard in order to incorporate Dakota perspectives, experiences, and values into that space, which is so important to us. And so that's been a long project that has been, people have been working incredibly hard. And one word on a temporary sign is just a reflection, and it is in no way an official change. That being said, you know, I think that we all know that these conversations are happening all over the place, and that doesn't mean that that conversation can't happen, but there needs to be community engagement, and people need a chance, all people need a chance to give input on how they feel about that space and what the name should be there.
So wasn't that sign up for two years?
That sign has been up for 2 years. So some of the reports that came out about new signage was mistaken.
Right. So,
and that, actually, I would like to point out, too, that the temporary signage was put up from a Native-owned company, including one of those owners was Dakota. And so that is, you know, really working with our community on that project as well.
So, like, with Standing Rock, and I was thinking what you were saying is that, you know, whenever I told what the whole real issue was at Standing Rock, it seemed like people was like, oh, well, that makes sense. Why are they doing that? So you get allies. So what can you tell our audience right now that they can tell other friends that come at them in a way, and not a good way, about the name change?
Well, they can talk about it from the perspective of that it's not a name change, that it's a restoration, that we are talking about restoring the Dakota name, that we're not actually talking about making any changes to history. We're not changing the lake. We're not, you know, as much as the Save Lake Calhoun folks might try to make folks think so, we're not draining the lake. We're actually enriching the perspective of others. So, you know, the more people can sit down and have conversations, talk about the lake, talk about the history, and that's one of the huge wins that we've seen in all of this, is that people are one, they're saying the language, whether they like it at first or not, and whether they have the pronunciation down or not. We figure it out, right?
Practice.
You need to practice, and, yeah, and you'll get it. You know, if my 3-year-old niece at the time taught the park board how to say it, we can all say it. So we're helping to educate one another, and that's really important. So around the language, around the history of this place, now a lot more people know about the Dakota presence. That's a huge win, and yet we will continue until we get the formal recognition.
And again, Calhoun was not a nice guy.
No, you know, Calhoun was a South Carolina senator who wasn't only in support of slavery, he actually fought to expand slavery across the western states. He also drafted the Indian Removal Act, which led to the Cherokee Trail of Tears and the displacement and deaths of thousands of indigenous people. He created the Bureau of Indian Affairs. You know, so this was not somebody whose legacy a lot of people want in our city or in our state. And it was also somebody who never set foot in the state, as far as we know. The other thing to it is that I think that there are a lot of people that have this sentiment right now that by adding in an indigenous voice is somehow taking something away. You know, as my sister said, it's making something richer. And the idea that inclusion and somehow creates some sort of space that excludes others is so foreign to me. And, you know, we as indigenous people, we work together on things. And, you know, I think that it's important for people to understand that we aren't asking for anybody to be forgotten. We know what that feels like. And we are compassionate people. We would not wish that on anyone, because we have experienced that. And what we are asking is that our ancestors, our grandparents, we remember too, and that we also create a space for our kids and our grandkids to be able to voice who they are and make a mark in our community as well.
We're contributing to the community, you know, not just us, but all of us. I truly believe that You know, with everything that's going on in this country right now, that's been going on since colonization, indigenous knowledge is what is going to lead to transformational change.
So one last thing, what else can we do?
Well, you can keep updated on Facebook through the Bademakaska name reclamation page. We'll be updating that periodically. Well, I should say that again. We'll be updating that in real time as things move forward.
And also, I think contacting, you know, your legislators, Keith Ellison's office, the DNR, just to continue to show support. The governor, you know, contact the governor's office and let, you know, let your voices be heard. You know, we don't need the comment section to rule media.
Pinigigi to Carly Badhart Bola and her sister, Kate Bean, today speaking about the Bademakaska Lake. We'll be right back.
This hour is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
The Neighborhood Cafe is a locally owned and operated business and proud sponsor of I'm Awake. Enjoy a great happy hour Tuesday through Saturday from 3 to 6 p.m. with specials on food and drinks. The Neighborhood Cafe serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner, all made from scratch daily. Located next to O'Gara's in St. Paul off Snelling and Selby, stop in and try one of their specialty sandwiches or delicious burgers paired with a local craft beer. More at theneighborhoodcafe.com.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Native-owned Meg Mechanical is your local heating, ventilation, and air conditioning professional. Meg has the experience needed to diagnose and repair your heating and air conditioning systems. Whether repair or complete mechanical design, we do it all. No job is too big or too small. Meg Mechanical has completed projects as large as U.S. Bank Stadium and will provide the same great service in your home. Visit magmechanical.com or call 612-655-5339. Please remember Mag Mechanical when you have HVAC needs. Mention this ad to receive 1 hour of free service.
The Downtowner Woodfire Grill in St. Paul is the perfect choice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. Offering daily fresh seafood specials, fire-roasted meats, exquisite pizza, and half-price bottles of wine on Mondays and Tuesdays, except on Xcel Energy event nights. Once you experience their cozy fireside dining, extensive wine list, and bar, you'll be back for more. Gift certificates and private dining room for parties available. Located at 253 West 7th Street with plenty of free parking or online at downtownerwoodfire.com.
When we go out to browse for books and grab something to eat, Moon Palace Books is where we go.
This unique bookstore is located at 3032 Minnehaha Avenue in Minneapolis, just minutes from St. Paul.
A great place to find one-of-a-kind books, cards, and great gifts.
Geek Love Cafe at Moon Palace Books has cold-pressed coffee, pizza, salads.
Local, organic, fair trade, vegan, carnivore options.
Beer and wine.
Community and performance room.
Great parking.
What are we waiting for? Let's go to
Moon Palace Books, 3032 Minnehaha Avenue, Minneapolis.
This hour is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian Country.
Live.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Say, we're always excited to have Timothy Purdon on. He works with Robbins Kaplan, and they work directly on Native issues. And I just wanted to reach out to Timothy, and Timothy wanted to reach out and give us an update of what they're doing right now. Welcome, as always, Timothy.
Well, thanks for having me on, Robert. I really enjoyed listening to your first segment, the folks talking about the renaming. It really brought up some connections to some of the issues we see here in North Dakota, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. One of the things that the twins, the sisters mentioned was that, you know, before we weren't even in the game, and now we're in the game, even though it seems like we're getting, you know, blasted by all ends, but we're learning, here in Minnesota, we're learning how to play the game, and it's all politics.
It is all about education. I just so much connected with their comments about what is taught in school and what is not taught in school. And it strikes me here in North Dakota, you know, we have the four large reservations, including, you know, the Fort Berthold Reservation, the Mandan Hidatsa, the Arikara Nation up in northwest North Dakota, and the seat of the tribal government up there is a town called Newtown, and you know, many of your listeners in Twin Cities probably have relatives there and know that area. And Newtown has been the seat of tribal government for some time. If you ask the average North Dakotan, why is that town called Newtown? They don't know the answer to that. Mm-hmm. And the answer, of course, is that the Garrison Dam was built in the late 50s, early 50s, as part of the Pick Sloan Project. It flooded the Missouri River behind the dam and flooded the entire lowland of the Fort Berthold Reservation, putting underwater towns like Nishu, Elbow Woods. Those people had to relocate, and they relocated where? To a new town, and that's why it was named Newtown. And people don't understand that history, and that's not ancient history. I mean, that's 60 years ago, 70 years ago. You can still talk to people who are alive, who can remember being little kids and having to pack up the family home in Elbow Woods as the reservoir, as the water from the Missouri River behind the Garrison Dam crept up and put their hometown underwater. And so that education is such a key. We in America don't do enough looking back and studying of history and seeing how we got to these points and the decisions that was made. So that really resonated with me.
I appreciate that. You know, another thing too, when they were moved, didn't they have really decent farmland, and then when they pushed them off, they were on a rock or something?
Well, right. So the Missouri River Valley, right, the old valley of the Missouri River, is some of the most, you know, fertile farmland in this part of the country. I mean, you've got cottonwood trees, you've got, you know, the cycles of flood and drought made that into very, very rich farmland. All of that farmland was flooded by Lake Sakakawea, the lake behind the Garrison Dam. And so the people who lived through that, the tribal members, they refer to it as, you know, we had to go up top. We had to go up onto the buttes and the hills around, which are not obviously the same quality farmland. You know, there's some incredible percentage of people that were relocated. 70-80% of the tribal nation had to be relocated as part of that project. And you know, the tribe is still paying price, and it completely changed the trajectory of that tribe, obviously. And again, this is not something from the 1800s or the 1700s, right? This is you know, right after World War II, the mid 50s.
Mm-hmm. Right, and a lot of people are still alive, and people wonder about trauma and how it's passed down. It didn't even really need to be passed down. People are traumatized still.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hear that generational trauma, and again, how often do we hear, you know, oh, well, you know, the lake is called Lake Calhoun now. Oh, you know, the tribe at MHA doesn't have the river valley. Well, shouldn't they just get over it and move on, right? Don't we hear that all the time? And you just say to yourself, well, I mean, this is not ancient history. This is, again, you can talk to people still alive up at Fort Berthold who went through this. It is not ancient history by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. So what are you guys doing now? What have you been lately working on?
Well, I've been working on a number of things here in North Dakota. You know, we represent the Spirit Lake Nation near Devil's Lake. We've been assisting them as they've been opposing a large-scale animal feeding operation, a hog farm that's proposed for the opposite side of Devil's Lake. The facility is proposed to just be, you know, not very far at all from the edge of Devil's Lake, which is, of course, the spiritual homeland of the Spirit Lake Nation. The body of water is very, very important to them. You know, the farm is also being built over top of their aquifer that feeds the reservation, and so we constantly have issues like that arising, and you know, we're very happy obviously when tribes reach out to us and involve us at Robbins Kaplan in those issues.
Right, and we also have elections coming up soon, and I think we got to be prepared. Tell our audience what how you helped with the last election.
Well, you know, we had the voter ID issue in North Dakota was a huge national story going into the election in November, with a couple of sort of late in the game court decisions. The voter ID requirement that you had to have an ID to vote, and that tribal ID, if you had a tribal ID, had to have a residential address on it as opposed to a PO box. We ran to court on that. Again, our client was the Spirit Lake Nation, tried to fight that. In the end, we were unsuccessful, but the get out the vote, the work that the tribes did, all four tribes, Turtle Mountain, Spirit Lake, Standing Rock, MHA Nation, to get IDs, IDs that were compliant into the hands of their members, you know, ended up driving a high turnout on the reservation communities in North Dakota. But our lawsuit goes on. We've now amended our complaint. In addition to Spirit Lake, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe in North Dakota has joined, in North Dakota and South Dakota, has joined our lawsuit as well. And we continue to move forward arguing that given the fact that many places on the reservation in North Dakota don't have physical addresses, there remain those issues that for North Dakota, the only state in the country that doesn't have voter registration. We're the only state in the country that doesn't have voter registration. Our history is you show up on election day and you vote. And if you don't have an ID, you tell the folks where you live and you sign an affidavit and you're allowed to vote. That's our history. Mm-hmm. We in that context, we think that some of these our allegations in our lawsuit is that these voter ID requirements that require a physical address are discriminatory, and they suppress the native vote in a way that's not acceptable.
We're here with Timothy Purden, Robbins Kaplan, LLP, representing a lot of people in Native country and Indian country. What do you got to say here this last minute we have? Do you want to give a shout-out or anything? Because I know...
Well, Robert, we just appreciate you having us on. And again, we love supporting your show, Native Roots Radio, an important voice, obviously, in the Twin Cities and on Facebook and across the Internet. We're appreciative of you having myself and my partner, Brendan Johnson, on every once in a while to talk about these things, and again, we appreciate it.
Pini Gigi, for all you do in Indian country, we're proud to be a part of your family. You're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back with John Greendeer.
We are Alusa Nation.
Jay Selby's, an airy plant-based cafe serving up American classics, nestled in the heart of St. Paul in the historic Cathedral Hill neighborhood at 169 Victoria Street. Jay Selby's serves great plant-based food and only plant-based foods, where customer service is a priority, great food a tradition, and a comfortable, cool space for like-minded people to gather and enjoy a sustainable, environmentally friendly, and compassionate meal. As the Star Tribune writes, Jay Selby's is an innovative vegan restaurant that does a spot-on Big Mac. It's a good day for good food.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by. Stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence. And shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
MN350 is a grassroots, volunteer-driven organization fighting for climate justice and a swift transition away from a fossil fuel-based economy. To get involved, visit mn350.org or find us on Facebook at MN350. Building a climate movement in Minnesota.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Six unique, fun, exciting, winning destinations located throughout central Wisconsin. Make your rounds to Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, or Wisconsin Dells for the hottest slots, most exciting games, award-winning guest service, delicious food and spirits, lodging, and live entertainment. Join the Ho-Chunk Gaming Rewards Club for free. And with a single card, you can earn valuable points no matter which of the six locations you choose to play. That means more exclusive offers, giveaways, cash back, discounts, and much more. Visit us online to see all we have to offer and find the fun times nearest you at HoChunkGaming.com. So wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, and Wisconsin Dells.
Experience the difference. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin.
Must be 21 or over to play.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Hunter Haas. Today, sunny with a high near 71. Tonight, chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low around 45. And Sunday, chance of showers, partly sunny with a high near 62. Mother Earth Gardens, organic gardening supplies and support. Women-owned and independent. Unique in an era where many independent garden centers are closing. They have a huge organic veggie selection on a small urban lot. So visit MotherEarthGarden.com. Again, that's Mother Earth Garden.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake. I'm Wakunjahade. This portion's brought to you by anyone we want.
Hey, right? Anyone we want. Let's go with Neighborhood Cafe.
Good food, good friends.
And also by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Hunter didn't howl. Hey, so let's get right with it. We got John Greendeer. John used to be president of Ho-Chunk Nation, and he works with them right now in the Heritage Department. And he's one of our correspondents that brings us stuff. And let's listen to his beautiful words today. Pinigigi John Greendeer.
Anachakchi, Jige, Hinikutagiwi no. To everyone out there, I greet you again. It's an amazing opportunity to share a little bit with you for all the listeners at Native Roots Radio and the hosts. My name is Mashuska, or as some people in my country always say, my tax-paying name is John Greendeer, but I haven't paid my taxes yet, so I'm going to hold off on that because that's not really accurate this year. Not long ago, I was asked to supplement the show with a little bit of Ho-Chunk history, a little culture, a little bit of knowledge about the government. I don't know why they asked me to do that. Sometimes it can be a difficult task because the nature of the subject of what you're speaking about can be precarious because a lot of these things derive from oral tradition. And as we know, families and people hear things a little bit different. So the nice thing about the Ho-Chunk community is we understand that. So we know that there's going to be variations in what we heard. And a lot of times in other cultures, difference divides people. It's interesting that, you know, difference actually brings us together because we all bring a little bit to the table to have a lot. And so that's part of the unique nature of the Ho-Chunk culture. So just recently, I returned from Michigan. I had a chance to visit the Indigenous Food Summit there. And it was the first time I did that. I haven't gone. As a matter of fact, this is something that happens annually, and I'm either busy or don't have enough money, and all my friends are going, and all the cool people are over there, and they're trading seeds, and they're learning how to cook foods. And so I miss it, and this time I did not. So I'm coming back a little bit high on the elation of culinary arts in Indigenous country, the use of Indigenous and Aboriginal food sources. So these folks are absolutely amazing. They are so brilliant. And it reminds me of our times about now, you know, past the equinox, that, you know, our new year is upon us. And so for those who follow the traditional way of life, our spring feasts are beginning, which is probably less about the feast and more about the families and the clans coming together to bring a little bit so that they can share with the other clans and families out there. So right now, even today, we are celebrating a spring feast, and I'll get to attend and listen to some of their stories, hear their songs. So these are parts of our culture that we are very proud of. And they're not out there on the table and in front, and you don't see Facebook posts about them too much in social media. They're not in our newsletter. They're not in the local paper. This is just a way of life. That's really what it is. It isn't. I wouldn't write a story about me brushing my teeth. It's just something I do. And so this is something that a lot of Ho-Chunks do. And you know, I wish more had a chance to learn about it. But it's also a way of life that doesn't go out recruiting people or trying to convert people to a manner of living. It's just there, and it's there for everyone. Everyone has a place there. So I'm really excited about that. This is a busy time of year for our earth clans. So our deer, our buffalo, our elk, and, you know, our leaders, our bears. So they're waking up right now, and you know, we're tending to the ground. We're, you know, after a winter is always a good time to see what our responsibility is to our environment, because things are starting to grow. Things are starting to remind us of how lush our natural world really is and what we have to do to protect it. And so these are our responsibilities to do as Earth Clan people. And this goes beyond, you know, not buying straws or walking to work or putting your aluminum cans in the recycling. This actually involves reminding us to create a lifestyle around really thinking about our natural surroundings, or as Jaji Gray Kumani says, you know, making sure that the rights of nature are ensured. And we have the sovereign authority to make sure that that's enforced. And I, you know, we've always had it. So I don't want anyone to think that we inherited it by some act of Congress or some treaty. We have always retained our sovereign authority. So that's one of the most important things to remember. We have always had organization as a community, as a social group, as a clan system. We had roles in our gender, in our ages. And so these are the things that helped us organize. And that's one of the things I was excited to talk about. I am a, you know, political science graduate, public administration and policy. So some of these things kind of intrigue me on one end, because it really is a unique juxtaposition to have a very culturally social organization of a people, and then to move them on to a different model of governance. Now, keep in mind that even the model of governance that we have isn't really European. This was not a creation of the matriarch of England or anything else. This was derived by some of the folks out, the indigenous people out in the East. So it's really important to remember that too, because often is the case, people say, well, this is our government, it's better. No, it's not. this organization as a governance was actually from a model of the Iroquois Confederacy. So let's not take credit where you don't have it. So we go back to the original groups. And you know, depending on what time period you jump in Ho-Chunk history, you're probably going to have a different profile because of primarily demographics. But the social organization, the language still remained a part of the heritage and somewhat static and unchanged. So when we organize, and this is, you know, post the boarding school era, well, we kind of still have a boarding school mentality in some regard, but we were disenfranchised. We were chased out. We had warfare. We held our ground. And so, you know, we didn't have much of of a social organization in terms of being able to provide our own sustenance so that our agri-fields or hunting lands, fishing, trapping, gathering, those things were now a bit frustrated by a series of land claims that were taking place. Now, remember, the state had just started in 1848, and later on the counties, through their efforts, began to build their nest eggs through taxation. And a lot of the land that was transferred and promised from the federal government to Ho-Chunks in the form of allotments or homesteads were looked at upon counties as taxable moments. And therefore, a lot of these pieces of property or parcels, if they weren't sold or taken or negotiated out of, were subject to tax that eventually went into default and foreclosure. So, you know, over a period of time, much of the land that was originally granted prior to them setting that into a trust status was lost. And so, and the counties wear this. They have this. Their acquisition of land is you know, nefarious. A lot of times any agreements that took place were done with what were called trustees of certain villages, encampments, or families. And these trustees, it didn't take them long to figure out that they never even had to meet with their own clients to actually sign off for them and have that enforceable either by the, you know, developing state administrators or the U.S. Army. And so, you know, one of my jaji said, you can't steal land. You can't pick it up and walk around and hide it somewhere. It's going to stay there. You know, so really what this is a paper war, a title, a deed, certification of ownership. So he hit the nail on the head because he's right. The land actually isn't going anywhere, but the ownership or the documentation, the new documentation now actually dictates who does have ownership over that property. And so that's kind of where the battles really took place. And as you can imagine, you know, even today, tribes have a difficult time having legal representation on a lot of cases because they don't have the resources to do that. You can imagine them, you know, about 100 years ago with this same problem, having no chance of having any type of representation on a lot of these early land claims. Now, I know I'm glossing over a lot of history, but, you know, ultimately the federal government, you know, realized that there was no way to sustain any tribes without having the designation of trust status. And so they began, you know, through acts of Congress designating properties. And eventually in 1934, when they passed the Indian Reorganization Act, you know, bequeathed some power upon the Secretary of Interior to take land into trust for the benefit of tribes to hold by the federal government. And so through this designation, all kinds of things have to happen. There was also from the land that the tribes did have or did receive from the government, they had to have some sort of governance to it. And there wasn't, you know, heirship to properties, you know, meant that sometimes down through the generations that number could grow increasingly to hundreds just for a small 40-acre property. And in order for any type of easement or any type of negotiation to take place, you had to have over 50% of the heirs to agree. Now, this is a problem, especially if you're the federal government. And so the only way to actually see a benefit of this is to consolidate that land into one singular owner. So these preempt our own Indian Land Consolidation Act, or ILCA, which is basically an effort to take land that has a number of heirs to it and have them receive payment at maybe fair market value to give up their share and then give that over to their governing tribe. So this has happened and still continues to happen. There's pros and cons to it. Obviously, as you know, the years go on, your interest in that property is always going to diminish. And so the value of that is going to be small. In order for you to do anything, you're going to have to get 50% or more to dictate what happens on that land. So eventually over time, it's probably, you know, more spam than anything. At least with this, you not only receive financial compensation for your property, but you also, it also goes to your governing tribe as well. And so that was the hope of taking place. Unfortunately, the singular owner didn't exist. There were not a lot of official tribal governments. And so in 1934, when they passed the act, they knew that that act required the U.S. government to send out sentinels to help tribes help tribes build governing councils. So this is when a lot of the governments formed. They did that with the Ho-Chunk as well. As a matter of fact, in June, one year later, in June of 1935, a lot of the Ho-Chunks met, over 200 of them met in Toma at the Indian school, and they had a meeting, and it was amazing because so many folks gathered, and we had government sentinels that were saying, you should organize under IRA, because you do have these benefits. And they counseled, and they even went into executive session. But the interesting thing about executive session back then is you didn't have to let anyone leave. You just switched your language to Ho-Chunk. And so that's what they did. And they deliberated in the Ho-Chunk language for several hours, only to conclude that the Ho-Chunk nation or the Winnebago or, you know, our people would not organize under the IRA. And it was because, you know, the counties had taken so much land. It seemed like that everything they signed on to with a promise came with a gaffe at the end, and we never received it. So they did not organize under that. And it wasn't until 1963 that we actually reorganized 39 years later. So this is the very beginning of our government, and it's a strong one. I'm very proud to be a part of it. We see a million things it's done. I can't wait, because I'd love to tell the story of from 1963 on and where we've built our strength as a government. So until that time, Hanachakji, Nagigiwi, Wo'inumpwi Wahaje, have a wonderful weekend.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
We are your relatives.
We are your relations.
Brothers.
Sisters.
Sons.
Daughters.
And some of us are your grandchildren.
We are your community. Historically, we held places of honor and respect. Because of the impact of colonization, some of us are rejected, thrown out from family, friends, and community, set up as targets for sexual violence, sex trafficked, humiliated, tortured, and murdered. Everybody has the right to be safe. We are your relatives. Remember,
homophobia is not traditional.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Indianapolis, hey, it's me, minus the face paint, from the Legion of Doom, Hall of Famer, Road Warrior Animal. Now, on May 11th, I'm coming back to the great state of Minnesota for the Women's of Nation wrestling event. That's right, me. Come take a picture, get an autograph, put on a spike shoulder pad. I will be there in face paint, in my garb. Come be there, Minneapolis, May 11th. Women's of Nation. Oh, what a rush.
Robbins Kaplan.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakun Jahade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Meg Electrical.
Mechanical.
Just testing you, Chuska.
Right on, I got it. Hey, here's another correspondent that we love having on, House Representative, State House Representative Mary Kunish Podine. Dismissed or ignored due to their underdog status. Their American Indian law.
To you from the state legislature. I want to wish everybody a happy May, and remember that it is our Native American Heritage Month. I was really lucky to get over to Minneapolis on the first to take a look at the parade that was out there and listen to a lot of good people talk about our beautiful heritage, and to listen to our Lieutenant Governor give the proclamation from Governor Waltz to acknowledge that May is Native American Heritage Month in Minneapolis. We had another busy day, but busy week over here at the legislature. We're sort of starting the last phase of the legislative session, and that is when we have conferencing between the legislature and the Senate. So after the House approves their budget and the Senate approves their budget, then the lawmakers from each of the chambers join together and form a conference committee to reach a final agreement on all of our budgets. And yesterday, the Senate decided, instead of staying and working, decided to take a recess. And they're actually refusing to name conferees to the different conference committees. And as a result, they won't be able to be at the table when many of the conference discussions begin this weekend. There's a lot of committees that are meeting this weekend, and they're continuing the hard work without the Republicans. So let's hope that the Republicans decide to come to the table. So remember, if there's any legislation you really care deeply about, please be sure to contact your individual state representative and your senator and tell them to get going on creating this really good budget for Minnesota. I wasn't assigned to one of the conferences, but I'll be attending them, especially around education and health and human services. Those were the committees that I sat on, and there's lots of good stuff in those, especially for our Native folks. One other big exciting thing that happened this week, of course, was when the State Court of Appeals ruled that the former Department of Natural Resource Commissioner Tom Landwehr didn't have the authority to change the name of the lake to Bede-Mikaska. And it was determined that only the legislature was able to do that. And so as soon as we heard that, we were actually on the floor in session. I got going with the reviser and asked them to help create some kind of legislation that would allow for the permanent naming of Bede-Mikaska. And we had to go like through five different versions of legislation until we were finally able to come up with a piece of legislation that would allow us to keep it as Bede-Mikaska. So we're not always working long and hard on things. Sometimes we have to do it on the fly. And so, of course, I support that legislation. And I think it's really important, once again, to remind folks how important it is that we acknowledge and remember that this was Indigenous land for hundreds and thousands of years, and it still is Indigenous land, and that by renaming this lake to Bede-Mikaska, we are again acknowledging the existence and the value of our Indigenous communities. And we'll continue to do that in so many different ways here at the legislature. I know that the Lieutenant Governor and Representative Becker Finn are going to be visiting some prisons and talking with Indigenous inmates, especially women, and looking at different options for our prison system. So it's all around hard work, and we're happy to do it. And of course, we'll need all your good support and endeavors in making this legislation really positive legislation. So I want to wish you all a happy weekend. I believe it is the powwow of hope to acknowledge the sad stories of breast cancer in our Native communities. I know that I have attended, I think, almost every single one of those powwows. I have a sister that passed away from brain cancer, not breast cancer, and so I kind of understand how hard it is to lose a loved one to that awful, awful disease. So I'm going to try to make it out there. There's so much going on. Cinco de Mayo, my own community has community meetings, but I hope you can all get out and enjoy the beautiful weekend. Everyone take care. Chi-mi-gwich.
Robbins Kaplan LLP protects and defends American Indian tribes because for too long they have faced a competitive disadvantage when litigating against powerful forces. With its American Indian law and policy practice, Robbins Kaplan LLP seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purden, their American Indian law and policy practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due due to their underdog status. Their American Indian law lawyers understand the challenges tribes face when state and local government infringe on tribal sovereignty and the federal government neglects its trust responsibilities. Their passion for tribal sovereignty and self-determination is the driving force behind their practice, fueling their tribal advice and advocacy, especially when tribes are forced to litigate against powerful interests. Robbins Kaplan LLP, representing American Indian tribes, tribal government boards and commissions, individual tribal members, and American Indian business and business concerns. For more information, visit robbinskaplan.com.
This is AM 950, KTNF, St. Louis Park, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Deadly plant blast, jet off runway. I'm Ann Cates. One person is dead and two other employees are missing after a chemical plant explosion in Illinois. Waukegan Mayor Sam Cunningham says the search has been halted for now.
We had to suspend any rescue or recovery attempts because of the condition of the building. But what they're doing right now is bringing in a fencing unit to kind of quarantine everything in. Once that unit is up and in place, we're bringing heavy-duty equipment to remove some of the particles of the building that are dangerous so we can then assume the rescue or recovery effort.
16 National Transportation Safety Board investigators are at Naval Air Station Jacksonville in Florida to determine why a plane with 143 on board slid off a runway into a river. Correspondent Rosa Flores.
They not only look at and investigate the actual aircraft, they look at the record and the history of the pilots, of the crew, what they were up to in the last 72 hours. They also look at the environment. What was the weather like? That sort of thing. Now, we do know that there were thunderstorms and lightning at the time. It's unclear if those had an impact.
Going to the polls today to elect mayors in Dallas.
Looked at.
Voters are going to the polls today to elect mayors in Dallas, Fort Worth, and San Antonio.
The three cities have a combined population of more than 3.5 million people. Dallas County Elections Administrator Tony Pippins-Poole says around 40,000 people cast votes early, which leads her to believe turnout will increase this election day.
Just still at the rate of 8%, 9%, when you're dealing with 1.3 million registered voters who are eligible to vote, that's really not really a good number, but it's better than the last 2 years.
Nine candidates are running for mayor in Dallas and nine in San Antonio. In Fort Worth, incumbent Mayor Betsy Price is seeking an unprecedented fifth term. Clayton Neville, Dallas.
I'm Ann Cates.
I am Welby Torres, owner and lead tech at Air Tech Automotive.
When a job well done is out of here and you see this customer's face lit up, you can't fake that. And that's satisfaction to me. What am I working for? To treat every car like I treat mine.
At ADP, we're designing a better way to work so you can achieve what you're working for. HR, talent, time, benefits, and payroll. Informed by data and designed for people. Learn more at design.adp.com.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need.
Yeah, you've been acting so conspicuous. You flip it on me, say I think so much. You're moving different when we making love.
Alexa, play Who Do You Love?
Okay.
Get unlimited access to over 50 million songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Victor's 1959 Cafe in South Minneapolis is a locally owned and operated restaurant offering traditional Cuban food. Open for breakfast and lunch daily with dinner Tuesday through Saturday. For night shift workers, Victor's even has both a morning and evening happy hour, and Victor's now accepts dinner reservations too. Stop in and try some delicious, authentic Cuban cuisine like ropa vieja and seafood paella. Make your reservation and learn more at victors1959cafe.com. Victor's 1959 Cafe, revolutionary Cuban cooking.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Metza inviting you to listen to a golden replay on the Wall of Power Radio Hour this weekend. 5 years ago, we celebrated Pete Seeger's 95th birthday, May 3rd, 2019. He would have been 100 years old. We have interviews with Nora Guthrie and Pete Seeger himself, including live music with myself, John Wesley Arning, and Pete Seeger backstage at the tribute to Woody Guthrie at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1996. Saturday, 6 p.m., Sunday, 4 p.m. on AM 950.
Robbins Kaplan, LLP, protects and defends American Indian tribes because for too long they have faced a competitive disadvantage when litigating against powerful forces. With its American Indian law and policy practice, Robbins Kaplan, LLP, seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purdon, their American Indian law and policy practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due to their underdog status. Their American Indian law lawyers understand the challenges tribes face when state and local government infringe on tribal sovereignty and the federal government neglects its trust responsibilities. Their passion for tribal sovereignty and self-determination is the driving force behind their practice, fueling their tribal advice and advocacy, especially when tribes are forced to litigate against powerful interests. Robbins Kaplan, LLP, representing American Indian tribes, tribal government boards and commissions, individual tribal members, and American Indian business and business concerns. For more information, visit robbinskaplan.com.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Hunter Haas. Today, sunny with a high near 71. Tonight, chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low around 45. And Sunday, chance of showers, partly sunny with a high near 62. This week's EatLocalMinnesota.com restaurant of the week is Burger Moe's. They offer 20 fresh, never frozen varieties, as well as delicious apps, soups, salads, dogs, paninis, shakes, and desserts. Located at 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul. And there's plenty of free parking. Find out more at BurgerMoes.com.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, hitting cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and family in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm Owakanjahade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Jay Selby's, and I want to give a special shout-out to New York City, to Grandma D. Burtis down there, man, and we're praying all is well with you, Grandma D.
Pina Gigi. Hey, I want to, speaking of New York City, my wife Wendy, who's an animal advocate, and she does things, I want to introduce her. She's a volunteer Minnesota State Council member for the Humane Society of the United States, and she works on animal issues at the state level, and she's in New York. Tell us your name and what you want to talk about, Wendy.
Hey there. Hi, everyone. I miss you. And, yes, so my name is Hanajihi Hani, and that means cares for them, and I was given that beautiful name by my Dega there in the studio, so thank you very much, Dega, for that name. I like to thank you every week for it.
You're very welcome, Chujunk.
Yeah, so I have two updates, and we could talk about either one first, Robert, whatever you decide. I could talk about the centipede, or I could talk about the wolves. Which one first?
The centipede.
The sacred insect.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll just give a really quick update. You know, last week we were kind of kidding around that I care about all animals and all beings, whether it's an insect, a snake, a reptile, a furry friend. And we did have a centipede in our sink, which I rescued and put in our basement. So now we have a house centipede, and we asked people to call in or write in and help us name this centipede. So we actually had two people wanting to name our centipede. We had a gentleman write in, and he wanted to name the centipede Big D. And although that's a fine name, I'm not really sure whether I really want Big D. I really wanted the centipede to have a cuter name because they're so god-awful, ugly-looking. And, we had Jennifer Grupner on our Facebook page, and she listens every week, and she wanted to name the centipede Catherine. And although Catherine is a very fine name also, I know too many Catherines, so I couldn't name a centipede Catherine. So I decided to name the centipede Lily, not knowing whether it was a boy or a girl. I had no idea. But, Robert, I have another confession to make.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Okay. So in the morning, while I was getting ready to leave for New York, I saw a little baby teeny-weeny centipede in our kitchen. So it was a female centipede, and I'm glad I named her Lily. So now she has babies. So I don't know. We might have to do something about the centipedes. But for now, they'll just live in our house.
We have a healthy house if we have centipedes.
That's right. Every house should have a centipede centipede in your house. So anyway, don't kill the centipedes. Anyway, I do have an update, and this is through the Humane Society of the United States, and it was just updated Tuesday, April 30th. And honestly, by just one vote, 66 to 65 votes, the amendment repealing the recreational wolf hunt was successful. So I'm really happy to say that. In an article also that I read from the Twin Cities Pioneer Press, an article written by Dave Orrick, it was published on April 30th and updated May 1st, says wolf hunting isn't allowed, but only because the animal is on the Federal Endangered Species Act. Under current state law, if wolves were removed from the protections of the Endangered Species Act, as the Trump administration has announced its plans to seek, they could be hunted as soon as fall 2020, although some think the hunt this fall could be possible. And here's a little bit of background. From 2002 to 2014, hunting and trapping seasons were held on wolves until a federal judge ruled that the plains of upper Midwestern states, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, were inadequate. And, former Governor Mark Dayton, for example, a Minneapolis Democrat, allowed the resumption of hunting in 2014. Robert, you'll appreciate this. And U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar, also a Minneapolis Democrat and presidential candidate, has been a vocal supporter, often suggesting a governor's wolf hunting opener when she speaks to hunting groups. Now, I know, Robert, you asked her a question at the Minnesota State Fair at the NPR booth about wolves and about pipelines, and I know that you weren't happy with either of her answers.
That's correct. She would want. Yeah. Didn't she say she wanted to be one of the first ones to shoot one of those? Shoot at one of our sacred wolves.
That's right, and that we had to get used to pipelines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Governor Tim Walz, he's a hunter. In an article written by J.T. Thadden on May 2nd, says that St. Paul, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz says he supports legislation to ban the recreational hunting of wolves in Minnesota if the federal government succeeds in removing them from the threatened list. So I'm happy to hear that. An amendment to prohibit sports wolf hunting has added to the House environmental bill, and the governor says that when he was in Congress, he supported delisting wolves where populations had recovered, but not nationwide. And while he supports managing wolf populations, he added he doesn't think sports hunting is appropriate. So I'm glad about that.
Right on.
Again, Minnesota held three wolf seasons before a judge restored federal protections in 2014. Also, Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, a member of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe, says the issue is personal for her because she's from the Wolf Clan, and there is a rule against hunting your own clan. So I'm hoping in that respect she can talk to Governor Walz, and he will finally and absolutely ban the recreational and hopefully other hunting and trapping for wolves in Minnesota. And you know what? If this is something that you care about, please call Governor Walz and your representatives to let them know, because all the phone calls is what helped push that one vote from 65 to 66. So we need those people to call their legislators, write their legislators, email their legislators, and even go visit them. They will have an appointment with you, and you can just sit and talk with them in their office about any issue that you really care about. You know, they're people too, and they're working for us. So I encourage everyone to do that. I know that Robert and I spend time at our state capitol, and that our representatives know who we are. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important. The other thing is I want people to realize is that these hunting groups, and the NRA, the National Rifle Association, these are organizations who want to keep the recreational hunting of wolves alive. People who hunt wolves for recreation will just go out. It's trophy hunting. That's exactly what mm-hmm. it is. So they would go out, they would kill these wolves. You don't eat wolf meat. Sometimes I guess you could sell their pelts and use it for fur in some cases, but you know, the animals are just indiscriminately killed for no reason and just left for dead. It's not like you're hunting and you're going to use the animal and eat the animal and, you know, do that. It's just pure trophy hunting. So that's the update that I have mm-hmm. for the Our Wolves, and we're happy that the amendment passed 66-65 votes,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not really sure whether I'm happy that our centipede Lily had babies, but, you know, we'll have to deal with it, Robert.
Do you have any centipedes at in New York in Long Island?
Well, funny thing that you should say this, because just before I got on the air, my mother said before I got here to Minnesota that she got into her shower and she had a centipede in her shower. However, the centipede was taken care in a different way. So let's just say my mother does not have a house centipede any longer.
So we can't have a contest and name them.
No. But I told my mom while I'm here staying with her that if another centipede or other animal, little insect or anything, we see, I'll be happy to just scoop it up and set it outside, and it can live its merry old life. So that's what we'll do here in New York. But
good one.
I know Robert often kind of makes fun of me when I'm trying to catch a fly in the house, and he sees me running all over with a paper cup and an index card trying to trap it in there. But
and it usually has a native word on there. That's one of my index cards when I'm trying to learn Ho-Chunk, and she's like, shooing out the fly. Shoo fly,
exactly.
Don't bother me. Shoo fly, don't bother me. All right. Hey, well, Wendy, thank you for giving us information on our sacred animals and insects and beans. It's a huge deal,
you.
And I know people out there love your segment, and I'm glad that you were able to call in and give a big hug to my mother, Sandy. And
I will.
We'll be back after this short break. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Up next, Jamie Edwards, Director of Governmental Affairs at Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
The Neighborhood Cafe is a locally owned and operated business and proud sponsor of I'm Awake. Enjoy a great happy hour Tuesday through Saturday from 3 to 6 p.m. with specials on food and drinks. The Neighborhood Cafe serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner, all made from scratch daily. Located next to O'Gara's in St. Paul off Snelling and Selby, stop in and try one of their specialty sandwiches or delicious burgers paired with a local craft beer. More at theneighborhoodcafe.com.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Native-owned Meg Mechanical is your local heating, ventilation, and air conditioning professional. Meg has the experience needed to diagnose and repair your heating and air conditioning systems. Whether repair or complete mechanical design, we do it all. No job is too big or too small. Meg Mechanical has completed projects as large as U.S. Bank Stadium and will provide the same great service in your home. Visit magmechanical.com or call 612-655-5339. Please remember Mag Mechanical when you have HVAC needs. Mention this ad to receive 1 hour of free service.
The Downtowner Woodfire Grill in St. Paul is the perfect choice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. Offering daily fresh seafood specials, fire-roasted meats, exquisite pizza, and half-price bottles of wine on Mondays and Tuesdays, except on Xcel Energy event nights. Once you experience their cozy fireside dining, extensive wine list, and bar, you'll be back for more. Gift certificates and private dining room for parties available. Located at 253 West 7th Street with plenty of free parking or online at downtownerwoodfire.com.
When we go out to browse for books and grab something to eat, Moon Palace Books is where we go.
This unique bookstore is located at 3032 Minnehaha Avenue in Minneapolis, just minutes from St. Paul.
A great place to find one-of-a-kind books, cards, and great gifts.
Geek Love Cafe at Moon Palace Books has cold-pressed coffee, pizza, salads.
Local, organic, fair trade, vegan, carnivore options.
Beer and wine.
Community performance room.
Great parking.
What are we waiting for? Let's go to
Moon Palace Books, 3032 Minnehaha Avenue, Minneapolis.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, I'm Wakunjahade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition and also by Midwest All-Star Wrestling.
I'm here with Andrea Carmen, Yaqui Tribal member and executive director of the International Indian Treaty Council. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you for having me.
So let me ask, what does the International Indian Treaty Council do?
Well, that's a big question. The International Indian Treaty Council was founded in 1974 on Standing Rock Reservation, which, of course, everyone in the world has heard about now, which is great
that they dapple,
that
sure.
they yeah that they've heard about it. But we were actually founded there to be an international advocate and voice for Indigenous nations at the United Nations. We were the very first Indigenous organization to start working at the United Nations. The first to be recognized with consultative status from the Economic and Social Council. And in 2011, the International Indian Treaty Council was actually upgraded to the highest level of non-governmental organization status, even though we, of course, represent governments and nations. That is the name of the status, NGO status. We have general consultative status with Economic and Social Council because starting out in the human rights arena, taking treaties to the United Nations, we were co-organizers of the very first Indigenous Peoples Conference in 1977 in Geneva, focusing on Indigenous Peoples of the Americas. And then there was a second conference in 1981. And one of the things that was called for at that time was a place for Indigenous Peoples within the United Nations system. So in 1982, the UN Working Group on Indigenous Populations was founded. We weren't peoples then, we were populations, but that's where I started working as a young person, a new person, going with our leadership and our elders. And that is the body that developed the first draft of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which I became the lead spokesperson for the International Indian Treaty Council through its journey, through the UN system, through the Commission, and then the Council on Human Rights, into the work here in New York on the General Assembly to get it adopted in 2007. We also, though, work in many different other areas of the UN, all of which affect our lives and the struggles of our peoples in our grassroots communities. For example, we work in the UN Chemicals Conventions. We just had an interactive dialogue today for Indigenous peoples with the UN Special Rapporteur on Toxics and Human Rights, talking about how we're affected by pesticides, which very much affects my community in northern Mexico, mining, hazardous waste dumping, and all of those issues that affect our lives, and especially the reproductive health and intergenerational health for our women and coming generations. At the UN Committee on Food Security, which we're able to turn from just a governmental body to having two seats for Indigenous peoples, as well as there are other members of what's called civil society there as well, women, youth, pastoralists, etc. We also have been working for many years at the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, and that is a body that has been especially frustrating because everybody knows, including all the reports, that Indigenous peoples are the most severely affected by climate change. However, we've had to really struggle and clamor and demonstrate and demand to even get any kind of voice or space there, even for the Paris Agreement, where we were able to get Indigenous peoples' rights recognized in the text for the first time. We were not able to even be in the room for the negotiations of the text. And that's why what we were able to achieve just in December of last year, of 2018, just a couple months ago, in Katowice, Poland, at the 24th Conference of the Parties of the Framework Convention on Climate Change. To be clear, the countries, the states, are the parties to UN conventions, and we're, you know, some form of observers. But we were able to get the facilitative working group for the new what's called Local Communities and Indigenous Peoples Platform for Exchange of Traditional Knowledge for Adaptation and Mitigation of Climate Change, set up with equal participation in a formal UN body between Indigenous peoples, seven, selected directly by the seven regions of Indigenous peoples, and there'll be seven states. We're meeting for the first time this June. I say we because I was selected by the organizations and tribes and First Nations that have been active in this process at the UN on climate change as the North America representative on this committee. And Grand Chief Wilton Littlechild from Alberta, Canada, was selected as my alternate.
So you do a lot of work. Can I just ask one more question? How do folks connect with you or your organization? Is there a website or some other information that you can share so they can get more information from the International Indian Treaty Council?
Yes, we have. We're on Facebook. Just look up International Indian Treaty Council. We also have a webpage, which is www.iitc for International Indian Treaty Council.org. And there's a lot of information and updates there. People can email me very easy at Andrea@treatycouncil.org, and I'd be happy to put you in touch with our wide range of affiliates and staff and board members that are doing work on a range of issues, or steer you to another organization if that's the place you should go. But we really encourage also the new generation of young people. We have a lot of youth on our delegation. One of our representatives is the co-chair of the Global Youth Caucus, and that's really where a lot of focus needs to be as well, is bringing young people, new generations, into this work who are interested in defending our rights at the United Nations, taking our place as Indigenous peoples to contribute to these dialogues that are happening here.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the next speaker would be Bill Luck, Bando.
United States. Good luck.
Bonjour, Zungi Gabo and Dishkakas, McGizzy Nandude, Mrs. C, Zaga Ingmin, and Donjaba. My English name is Jamie Edwards, and I'm from the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians located in the Great Lakes region of the U.S. I would like to first acknowledge the elders and others from indigenous communities across the world, some who have traveled great distances to participate in these very important interactive hearings. It is not always easy to leave your home community to attend meetings like this, but your participation is paramount. In addition, I'd like to also thank the UN President of the General Assembly and others who have helped carry out this consultative process. Regarding participation modalities, as many of our friends and allies have said before, Indigenous peoples' governing institutions are the authoritative and duly constituted decision-making bodies recognized by their own Indigenous constituents. And they should have a status in the UN that recognizes this reality. As such, Indigenous governing institutions should have the right of participation generally greater than the right of NGOs, a status not unlike those of observers in the General Assembly. As representative bodies, Indigenous governing institutions should have priority over NGOs with regard to seating and order of speaking, and relaxed limitations on speaking rights, all subject, of course, to reasonable rules of procedure for each meeting and at the discretion of the chair. Importantly, these new rules should not adversely affect or impair the existing arrangements for Indigenous peoples' organizations and NGOs accredited by the Economic and Social Council. Enabling Indigenous governing institutions to participate will not impair existing arrangements. Instead, it will enhance the international dialogue and contribute to global governance, sustainable development, and responses to worldwide challenges such as violence against women, climate change, deforestation, and the preservation of biological diversity. The UN Declaration recognizes that Indigenous peoples have the right to self-determination and self-government, and we look forward to contributing to the good work ahead to establish new rules that will enable them to participate more fully, effectively, and permanently in the world community, and to make valuable contributions to the United Nations. Miigwech, thank you for the opportunity to speak before this body.
Hey, that's Jamie Edwards, Director of Government Affairs of Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. And guess what? We're going to have him on next. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Jay Selby's, an airy plant-based cafe serving up American classics, nestled in the heart of St. Paul in the historic Cathedral Hill neighborhood at 169 Victoria Street. Jay Selby's serves great plant-based food and only plant-based foods where customer service is a priority, great food a tradition, and a comfortable, cool space for like-minded people to gather and enjoy a sustainable, environmentally friendly, and compassionate meal. As the Star Tribune writes, Jay Selby's is an innovative vegan restaurant that does a spot-on Big Mac. It's a good day for good food.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
MN350 is a grassroots, volunteer-driven organization fighting for climate justice and a swift transition away from a fossil fuel-based economy. To get involved, visit mn350.org or find us on Facebook at MN350. Building a climate movement in Minnesota.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Ho
Junk Gaming Wisconsin, wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Six unique, fun, exciting, winning destinations located throughout central Wisconsin. Make your rounds to Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, or Wisconsin Dells for the hottest slots, most exciting games, award-winning guest service, delicious food and spirits, lodging, and live entertainment. Join the Ho-Chunk Gaming Rewards Club for free. And with a single card, you can earn valuable points no matter which of the six locations you choose to play. That means more exclusive offers, giveaways, cash back, discounts, and much more. Visit us online to see all we have to offer and find the fun times nearest you at HoChunkGaming.com. So wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, and Wisconsin Dells.
Experience the difference. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin.
Must be 21 or over to play.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Hunter Haas. Today, sunny with a high near 71. Tonight, chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low around 45. And Sunday, chance of showers, partly sunny with a high near 62. Mother Earth Gardens, organic gardening supplies and support. Women-owned and independent. Unique in an era where many independent garden centers are closing. They have a huge organic veggie selection on a small urban lot. So visit MotherEarthGarden.com. Again, that's Mother Earth Garden.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Jay Selby's.
Hey, we're excited to have Jamie Edwards, and he's Director of Government Affairs at Mille Lacs Lakes Band of Ojibwe, and that's who you were listening to this last segment. Jamie, welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Hey, Robert, how are you doing? Thank you.
Doing great. Hey, we had a great time with KFAI going 18 hours this past week in the kickoff of Native American Month. But again, that's every month for us, right?
Right.
Yeah, that was a cool event. We pulled it off, 18 straight hours of continuous programming.
I know Roy's still tired.
I believe that. He was up at the beginning and closed it out at midnight.
So. That's right. That's a lot of work. Hey, so tell us a little bit about your trip in New York and talk about anything you'd like to talk about. I'm just really happy to finally have you on our show.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for the invite, Robert. I would like to correct a bit. My title, at one point I was Director of Government Affairs. My new title is Special Advisor of Intergovernmental Affairs, so that's a mouthful. I want to make sure we have another person who is actually the director of,
That pesky Google doesn't work, boy. I just wanted to copy and paste you.
well, that's all right. That was a title I had at one point in time. But the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues was the meeting that I was on, and as you could... I was in New York, and that's the 18th session. So that meeting started in 2000, of course, bringing in conversation and dialogue with high-level officials within the United Nations and indigenous peoples and their representative institutions. And I'm using the verbiage of the United Nations. You know, one of the things about when you go to the United Nations and you enter in New York City, and I'm sure this holds true for other locations throughout the globe, but once you enter into the grounds of the United Nations, you're no longer in the U.S. You know, you're in international territory. Mm-hmm. And the way they do business is very different than, you know, the governments that we deal with, as representatives from Indian country or advocating for communities or for the collective. So it's a different environment. You have to learn the process and the way in which they do business. But yeah, it was a great opportunity to participate. A lot of indigenous peoples from all over. Mm-hmm. Right. I met a woman. She was the president of the Sami Parliament. And they're in Finland and Russia and a few other parts of that region of the world. And I said, wow, I finally met a, a Fendian. A lot of Ojibwe's that are intermarried and have
Fendian
with Finlanders. I'm not an actual Fendian. So, but yeah, amazing work that's being done, and of course you tuned in to Andrea Carmen, who's been at it for some 25 plus years. Started out as a young woman and now is doing amazing work and understands that system, you know, very well. I think, Robert, I played a few segments when we did that 18 hours of continuous programming. There are a few other folks who have been attending those meetings for many, many years. So it was an honor and a pleasure and a lot of new information to take in. So I was very happy to be a part of that this past year.
Yeah, and we had the local brothers were down there in their family, the LaPointe brothers, correct?
Yeah, I did run into the LaPointe brothers, and there's so many activities that are going on consecutively. It would be impossible to actually attend all of them. So, I was involved through an organization that our chairwoman from Mille Lacs, is a board member of, and that organization is the Indian Law Resource Center. And so they do similar work to what the International Indian Treaty Council does. They represent indigenous communities, tribes, and then indigenous peoples in Central and South America. And so I was participating with that organization, and ironically, the focus for my statement or my colleague who was also there, the head of our natural resources division, who was there and also gave a statement to that body, has to do with participation. One of the directives under the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples was for the UN to figure out the best way to incorporate indigenous peoples and or their representative institutions into the fabric of the UN. And, you know, there's several layers. It's a very complicated system. There's the General Assembly, where you have 190 plus states, member states, and those are the countries. And then you have, you know, this particular forum is under the ECOSOC, which is Economic Social Council. And, you know, so you have the different classifications and different, organization structure throughout. And, they're part of my statement was about the best approach or recommendations under this consultation effort that's been happening over the last few years on incorporating indigenous peoples into the UN in a better way. So.
That's awesome. You know, Jamie's one of those. We have your picture up on Facebook Live, and Jamie's one of those Indians that looks like he's 20 years old all the time, and we're all jealous over here at Native Roots Radio.
Real young looking Indian.
I'm not as young as I might look for sure.
That's a good thing. So hey, do you want to tell us a little about your radio show over at KFAI, because I think it's a really interesting concept.
Very cool. And I'm glad that you dug my playlist for my part of my 3 hours there. I have to share that with you. So yeah, me and a friend of mine, a guy by the name of Brett Buckner, who's an organizer, community organizer, and guy previously ran for city council in Minneapolis unsuccessfully, but a good guy, very active politically, does a lot of get out the vote work and civic engagement work and, you know, community empowerment work. We've really kind of grown frustrated. We felt like the certain organizers or organizations that are geared towards civic engagement, increasing participation in elections, we're really kind of missing opportunities by not incorporating music and entertainment to court different communities. And I'm a big hip hop head. I'm from Minneapolis, but I spent 10 years plus on the East Coast, and so I've, you know, that knowledge kind of, I was a break dancer back in the day. And
hey,
so
now where's the video?
We'll see if I can find. You know, it happened to be on VHS for sure.
Were you one of those kids that walked around with their cardboard and just started doing it?
No, I didn't walk around with cardboard, but I could be seen in different parts of the city. I remember there was a photo of me breakdancing in Roosevelt high school's lower level there. So, yeah, I was an original B-boy, OBB, as I call it. So, I the love of hip-hop music, and then, you know, being involved in a public policy in that realm for a considerable period of time, you know, just blending those things together as a way to encourage, you know, greater participation and to educate folks. So breaking down public policy issues into bite-sized mm-hmm. morsels, bringing in those folks that are advocating for different things, like the census project as well. We brought someone in, just break that down. We brought another individual in regarding redistricting and how important that is. Mm. Some legislators, the AG in. And we're just trying to make, break public policy, break politics down into bite-sized morsels, and then entertain using mm-hmm. that edutainment model, which comes from another rapper from the South Bronx. That's KRS-One. So using those mm-hmm. tools to educate and entertain, and create a different type of movement. And there have been hip hop caucuses in the past that have advocated different artists have led campaigns. So I think we're kind of right in line with that work in the past. And,
so you're and like the presence. You're like breaking it down with breakdown dance music. That's basically what's happening.
You could say that, or you could say the breakdown or the get down or break beats, which is really kind of the origin of hip hop music. And when I was in New York, after the Permanent Forum and being a part of those activities, I went to the Mecca, the birthplace of hip hop, which mm-hmm. is 1520 Sedgwick Avenue in the Bronx. And that was where the first party that was held August 11th, 1973, where an individual was using two turntables and was taking the little breakdown segment of songs and then just kind of recycling them to create that hip-hop rhythm, right? So anyway, I had a chance to do that.
That's awesome. So one of the interesting things, knowing you, and then listening to you on the radio, you have a different personality, which is really awesome. I know my uncle here has a different personality too when he's on the radio.
Robert, we're multidimensional human beings.
Oh, that's right.
So, one of us had to become the hip hop head and present that, because authenticity is really important mm-hmm. in whatever we do, right? In the work we do in Indian community and of course, hip hop. I tell people hip hop is unapologetic. You can't be whack. you gotta know what you're talking about. If not, you'll be dismissed. And so that authenticity is important to get those key messages to the target audiences that we're trying to connect with. So, I have no problem. It kind of gives me an opportunity to show these other sides of me. I guess I've earned
Stay creative, brother.
Right on. So just give us a quick 2 seconds. What time are you on and what day?
All right. So, Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy on KFAI 90.3 FM on Monday evenings from 6 to 7 p.m. But you can also check us out on iTunes podcast, that format, Stitcher and Spotify under Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy.
Jamie, thank you so much for being on and helping us out with the content today. And thank you for what you do for your community and our people. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake with Uncle Curtis.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States. And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
When we heal from our traumas,
when we face our fears,
let go of our addictions,
when we relearn our values,
when we live our teachings,
respecting our elders,
cherishing and honoring our children,
when we honor and take care of our spirit,
there will be no room left for sexual violence.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Minneapolis. Hey, it's me, Minus the Face Paint, from the Legion of Doom, Hall of Famer, Road Warrior Animal. Now, on May 11th, I'm coming back to the great state of Minnesota for the Women's of Nation wrestling event. That's right, me. Come take a picture, get an autograph, put on a spike photo pad. I will be there in face paint, in my garb. Come be there. Minneapolis, May 11th. Women's of Nation. Oh, what a rush.
Robbins Kaplan LLP protects and defends American Indian tribes because for too long they have faced a competitive disadvantage when litigating against powerful forces. With its American Indian law and policy practice, Robbins Kaplan LLP seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purden, their American Indian law and policy practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due to their underdog status. Their American Indian law lawyers understand the challenges tribes face when state and local government infringe on tribal sovereignty and the federal government neglects its trust responsibilities. Their passion for tribal sovereignty and self-determination is the driving force behind their practice, fueling their tribal advice and advocacy, especially when tribes are forced to litigate against powerful interests. Robbins Kaplan LLP, representing American Indian tribes, tribal government boards and commissions, individual tribal members, and American Indian business and business concerns. For more information, visit robbinskaplan.com.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake. I'm your host, Robert Pilot. You know, this portion is brought to you by Ho-Chunk Nation, the people of the Sacred Voice, and also Midwest All-Star Wrestling. We're going to be there next week. Kicking some butt, I think, aren't we?
We're going to be kicking some serious butt.
You know, Curtis is bringing in Austin, and I'm going to have the metal chair and table underneath the ring in case you need any help, and I can still do the suplex, I think.
You got my back, Chuska.
Well, welcome, Choka. And this is what we like to call, what does my elder think, and this is my uncle.
Aho, Pinagigi Chuska. Aho, Pinagigi Chuska. My name is Mashke Hanajinga. I walk on the white clouds, and you know, I was going to use John Greendeer's thing about that taxpayer, but I'm going to say my colonized name is Curtis West, and thank you, John. I stole that from you, but anyway, I want to say hi to my baby girl, Kim, at home, you know, and I want to say hi to Wendy Pilot down in New York. And I'd like to say ha-ho to my family and relatives and friends in four directions. We pray all is well. And first of all, I want to give, like I said, my Chuska gives me a minute to express myself, so I'm going to take advantage of it. But first off, I want to talk out to my grandson Parker Kuna West out there in Egan, and you know, hope you heal fast. He got a sports injury today, and I don't know what the severity of it is, but I pray that it's not going to be a lasting thing. So, anyhow, Robert lets me do some shout outs, some birthdays, some events, and stuff. So I like to start off with birthdays. And there's a person, I don't know his real name, but he goes under a Buffalo Messenger, and it's his birthday today, so we're going to say, and he listens to us, so ha-ho to you. And a good one that my Chujunk, that's really dear to our heart here at Native Roots Radio, we want to say happy birthday to Tane Moose.
Tane.
Yeah, so we want to say happy birthday, Tane, and many more blessed ones like that. And then we got a relative down in Iowa, you know, her name is Shayla Chapman. So we want to say happy birthday to her and my little mom over in God's country. I'm going to say happy birthday to Nellie Peoples. And the one special one that's coming out, and I know she's listening, is our rescued cat. Her name is Lucky. She'll be 7 years old on Wednesday. So happy birthday, Luck.
Happy birthday, Lucky.
And then, you know, like I said, you know, we always say about the elders are very important and special to us, so we can't never forget about them. So so we want to say happy birthday to these elders, Philip Van over there, and Michael Goodbear, and Alan Cloud, and Clinton Thunder Chief. You know, we want to say happy birthday to my elders, you know, much love and much respect, and we like to say it like that. And our shout-outs, you know, that we're going to do, you know, today is, remember tomorrow on Sunday, May 5th, you know, everybody wear something red. it's National Day of Awareness for our missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, you know. So we want to say, wear something red tomorrow, and we really appreciate that, because I'm going to wear all red, even my, I won't say what else, but they're all red.
You got red boxer shorts.
Beautifuls. And we want to pass out our condolences out here to one of our native, our Wangsheek family relative out there. He's from the Sioux Nation. You know, he was a Navy veteran. He walked on. So we'd like to pass our condolences on to Roger Marlowe. He was a Navy vet. So, you know, we want to pass on condolences, heartfelt condolences. Oh. And you remember this one, too, you know, is May is, you know, Mental Health Month. You know, I want to say that much, you know, like that. You know, and I want to segue into this. But I want to give shout-outs, too, to Clyde Belcourt.
No.
Much love and respect to you, Clyde. And we always want to say hi to Barry Hand. And a special shout-out to KFAI, you know, and like that. You know, we're going to do it like that. And I want to wish my Mexican brothers and sisters a happy Cinco de Mayo. And I'm going to say it like that much. And anyway, the other one, that's a big event coming up. But we always got to say hello to Dave and Eli from Midwest All-Star Wrestling, you know. So you want to say much like that. But and then I'm going to get into some shout-outs, too. You know, I asked for the prayer warriors to send out some love and prayers for Dee Burtis down in New York City. And my brother that I grew up with on the west side is Dennis Wingy. He's battling hospice right now. So I just want to give that much a shout-out like that, you know. So, but anyway, on the events today, as you know, from 12 to 7 p.m. today, it's out there at the Boy Scout Base Camp. It's the 8th Annual Power for Hope. It's out at 6202 Bloomington Avenue, or Bloomington Road, my bad, in St. Paul, okay? And then tomorrow is very important, too, because we're going to have some Azteca dancers out there. But tomorrow, May 5th, it's a May Day gathering at the Powderhorn Park at 3400 South 15th Avenue, Minneapolis. And
I heard it might be their last one.
That's what I'm hearing. I hope not, but it's going to be a big deal. So try to make it out there and show some love and support. But and today, we can't forget that it's Midwest All-Star Wrestling's it's at the Historic Mounds Theater.
That's right, Jack.
And they call this event tonight the Enemy of the People.
The Enemy of the People.
Historic Mounds Theater, you know. So that's at 1029 Hudson Road in St. Paul. Doors open at 6, first bell at 7 o'clock. And you know what we always say over here, too, is that language, no matter what nation you represent, language is very important to each and every one of us. And so Monday, it's a beginner's class at the Ho-Chunk branch office in St. Paul. That's at 5:30. And then Thursday, they mix the advanced and the beginners at 6:30. And like me and Chuska always say, bring a lunch or something to share. If not, tie on your feed bag. And so anyway, next Saturday, this is very important, too. And we've had it on the show, and we're going to keep promoting this. Next Saturday, May 11th, that's Midwest All-Star Wrestling. It's a big support thing for the Women of Nations, the Eagle Nest Shelter, and that's going to be at Sibley High School in Mendota Heights. And, you know, it's a meet and greet at 5:30. There's going to be some real big celebrities there. First bell at 7 o'clock. And like Chuske was saying earlier, that I got the honor to walk out of Wangsheek, a native brother, Austin Arrow. He's in the main event. They're going to be walking in with this awesome Red Lake hand drum group and with some beautiful Native women in their regalia. So that's going to be coming up like that. And the other
they got the High Criers beforehand time, signing autographs.
Yep.
Jumpy Jim Brunzel.
And the Animal.
And the Claw Master.
And the Claw Master. He slapped the claw on me over at the Minneapolis Indian Center. I didn't know why he did that, but he put me down to my knees.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot of them.
It's going to be awesome. And, you know, the other one that we want to bring up, too, is on May 8th. You know, that's the 24th annual Minneapolis American Indian Center Wellness Fair. That's from 11 to 3 p.m. That's at 1530 East Franklin in Minneapolis. So that's going to be very important to make your, you know, it's a Native month. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of events, and me and Robert are going to be mentioning a lot of them. And there's a whole bunch of stuff coming up.
Hey, do you have a quick what does my Gaga think? Or
yeah, I got you, Gaga. She said, wait till after the first day of summer to swim in our lakes, rivers, and creeks. For summer, we have to show respect for our waters and our water spirits.
Ahoo. I'd like to end with these thoughts. On this day, May 4th, 1863, 770 Santee Sioux boarded a steamboat in St. Paul, Minnesota for Dakota Territory. The Santee Sioux were forced to move after their lands were forfeited as a result of the Minnesota Uprising. Over 1,300 Santee Sioux were forced to move to lands that could barely support their life. During the first year, over 300 Santee Sioux died because of the conditions.
We are awake.
Robbins Kaplan, LLP, protects and defends American Indian tribes because for too long they have faced a competitive disadvantage when litigating against powerful forces. With